Emmy Award-winning Julie Blacklow and former journalist for King 5 Television from the early 1970s to the late 1990s is my guest. She went on to produce stories for national networks after that. I remember Julie very well from the King 5 days, and I saw that she wrote a column on Marketing Northwest. It piqued my interest, so I followed up and had a discussion with Julie a short time ago. I asked Julie first, what brought her to Seattle, and how did she end up at King 5?
Well, I was brought here by my then husband, Richard Blacklow, who took a job clerking for a judge. We were both from Washington, D.C., but he had just graduated law school and wanted to get as far away from his parents as he could. So he got a job in Seattle, and we migrated here and knew no one. And then one day, we went to a Dartmouth alumni reunion. That's where Richard had graduated from. And I met a young reporter named John Lipman, who was working at King. He was all of about 26 years old, and I was 23. John gave me the name of the news director. I called and made an appointment. I had no experience, even though I'd gone to one of the greatest journalism schools in the country, Northwestern. I never took a J school course. So I really just knocked on the door and went into his office and sold myself and just said, you know, he was shocked that I had no experience, but I was a young woman in the right place at the right time. And I told him I had great curiosity about everything. And I thought that was the very best trait that any journalist could have. And I had learned how to write at Northwestern.
What stories do you consider your biggest stories that maybe had the impact on the community you hoped it would, or along those lines? Is there any stories that you remember that really jump out?
One was about the kidnapping and mutilation of a young boy in Tacoma. And this was done by a sex offender who should never have been allowed out on the streets again. And anyway, to make a long story short, I covered the trial and interviewed the mother. It was a harrowing story, and it very much upset the whole state and the nation. It became a national story, too. Anyway, the end result was that as a result of this crime and my reporting and working with the prosecuting attorneys in Pierce County and the legislature, Washington State became the first state in the country to make almost permanent the incarceration of level 3 sex offenders, which this guy was. After that, Washington State passed that legislation. It subsequently became legislation in all 50 states. That was one story that had a national impact. The other was a story about a 22-year-old man who killed and raped an 8-year-old child in Seattle on Capitol Hill. I covered that trial too, although I became obsessed with finding out why. How could this happen? So we traced this young man's life from birth until he was found guilty of her murder. The story ended up airing on the Today Show nationally, and that was an amazing experience. But as a result of that broadcast, NBC received many letters from parents who had seen the story and decided they recognized their own children in Michael Green. And then institutionalize them. I realized then that the power of journalism.
And you were really reporting the backdrop Seattle stories from, again, the early 70s till about 2000. And that was...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a time of tremendous change in the city, because I came to Seattle in the 60s, and that to me was just an amazing time. I mean... the growth, you know, Microsoft in the mid-70s, then Major League Baseball came back. The Seahawks came into existence and so on. Did you have that feeling then about the city of Seattle and it was really hitting its stride at that time?
Absolutely. I agree with you. I saw it as a small town when I first got here because I'd grown up in Washington, D.C. and New York. But Seattle seemed to me a real jewel. as it started to grow. And I was happy to be part of the reporting profession so I could observe it. And I, you know, there are a lot more. I mean, Nintendo, Starbucks, Eddie Bauer, you know, I covered all of those stories. I interviewed all the Nordstrom brothers. It was a great time to be here and to see what's happening now is heartbreaking. And I know I'd be reporting what's happening now quite differently than what I'm seeing.
Okay, let's get to that.
It's been a complete breakdown in government. There seems to be a complete severance of those connections. In the 70s and 80s, when I did cover City Hall and I knew all of the council people and the county council people too, there were disagreements, but the focus was never lost on what the people needed or wanted or were demanding in more extreme cases. I remember the days of the city council, the Sam Smith, the Jeanette Williams, Phyllis Lamphere, the mayors, the various mayors I knew, Norm Rice, Charlie Royer, Wes Ullman, going back into the 70s. They were respectful. They all listened. This current council, watching what's happened to the utter neglect of dealing with the homeless population and the causes, no one seems to be taking action. To see a mayor like Jenny Durkin, whom I know, and a police chief like Carmen Best, whom I know, resign, is a real warning sign that if they've not given up, the only way they felt they could make their voices heard was to leave. And that tells me that the city council is dysfunctional. And to see these homeless encampments rising up and taking over city parks, you have this ultimate clash between residents who have needs and should be respected and the homeless population who have needs and need to be heard also. I hear about millions being spent on homelessness, but I don't see any change. And I know that's the cry of many of my Seattle friends who do not understand. Now, I don't know if it's a function of age or a lack of experience. I'm all for young people getting involved. So I know the average age of the council is much younger than it used to be in the 70s and 80s, but that's not the issue. Many young people have the ability to listen. And I just get the sense from what my friends are saying and what I'm seeing that their inaction is causing a shocking degradation of this city. I was concerned when I saw the police leave the East Precinct. That was wrong. That was not smart.
Well, you know, it's really great to get your perspective because, again, you were covering, doing the beat during the time of what I saw, the great growth and just the optimism of the city. We certainly had our problems, but we had a series of really good mayors. And as you mentioned, it just seemed to me that there was this community spirit. I just got finished reading Norm Rice's book about community. It's a great book, by the way. But he said in the book, it's so important to listen, to hear what people are saying. And one of the things that I've looked back at Norm Rice, and when he was elected, we had the city was very divided because of school busing. And Doug Jewett was running against him, was for busing, and Norm was against doing away with busing. But he also said this is not the issue per se. We need to focus on the schools. But I think it just goes to leadership and how the city was at that place in time. They ended up voting to end school busing very close, like 51-49%. But Norm Rice won the election 57-43%.
Mm-hmm.
People could distinguish between leadership and trust in the individual. And I think Norm, more than anybody, as far as looking back at a mayor, was able to do that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It was a series of great mayors, just one after the other. You read all the time about the businesses crying out for police protection. And then you hear this ridiculous defund the police.
One comment when you talk about, let's say, Jenny Durkin, the mayor, and then Carmen Best, the police chief. Here's like something you, again, head scratch, that you hear from the city council all the time about, you know, women of color and minorities being promoted and everything. And what's the first thing they do? Cut Carmen Best's salary by $40,000 or $50,000 a year. You go,
yeah.
What?
There's so many wrong moves. Can you imagine being one of the Nordstroms currently running the company, seeing your $70,000 display windows destroyed and not having a unified council?
Down on the street with their masks on, standing all nine of them with the mayor saying, this will not be tolerated. We're going to find these people. We've got cameras. And you can run, but you can't hide. We are going to do everything we can to run you down. But you don't see that. It's just a shame.
I'd pay a lot to be a witness to that press conference. Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, Julie, this is wonderful. Before I go, I want to talk about your book, Fearless, Book Diary of a Badass Reporter.
It is a memoir of growing up. How coming into a profession I never planned on, surviving incredible obstacles. No one's life by the time they're in their 70s, as I am, gets by, you know, without any suffering. I've had my share. I've had more of a share of good things happen. And so it's a story of a life and a story of survival, surmounting things I never thought I'd have to deal with. Two-thirds of the book deals with a life in television news and the stories I covered, the good, bad, and ugly, and the very funny. It's a whole life's journey. And looking back on it, which is what happens after you write a memoir, I think you go, how in the world did I survive all that? But I did.
Well, my thanks to Judy Blacklow, journalist and author of a book called Fearless, Diary of a Badass Reporter. And you can actually order that on Marketing Northwest, this site, or you can email Julie at Julie, J-U-L-I-E, Blacklow, B-L-A-C-K-L-O-W, .com. That's JulieBlacklow.com. This interview will also air on my weekly talk show, Voices of Experience, on KKNW 1150 AM at 4 o'clock PM on Tuesday afternoon and repeated Wednesday morning at 8 AM.